How are you, Kyle?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It sounds like I'm going to be doing some running on the treadmill, though, for the next couple of days.
I just can't get enough of this warm weather. Now we got to go back to it.
Yeah.
Kyle, interesting speech from the governor yesterday. Wanted to get your takes on it.
Yeah, it was. First thing, I thought it was interesting that he gave his special message to the legislature on government reforms at Grand Rapids City Hall. I mean, there was only about seven lawmakers even in the room when he was doing the talk, but maybe it was appropriate in the sense that he was talking about local government reform and what locals can do to cut costs and what he's going to do to tie state aid to local governments to the kind of reforms they're you know, they can do. You know, what he's asking for is that these local governments trim down their personnel costs by making all new hires pay 20% of their health insurance, and that pension costs be reined into what the state is doing. And he also asked that local governments make some kind of consolidation plan. He's not even calling on them to make any consolidations. He just wants them to make a plan. So he gave that presentation yesterday, about 25-30 minutes, and he seemed to get a pretty warm reaction from the folks in Grand Rapids City Hall, at least.
I thought the plan was interesting. Bill Rustem, the director of strategy and policy, was on earlier this morning, and I just wanted to get your take. As a journalist, you see these issues that unions have been screaming about, whether it's collective bargaining, whether it is changing arbitration law. What's your take on what kind of success the governor is going to have in making changes in those areas?
Well, I think he's going to have some success. You know, the interesting point for me is that he's not going after it with necessarily a hammer. I mean, he's not, you know, his first reform that he's calling on these local governments to make in order to just get a third of this statutory revenue sharing that they're already getting is to just develop a dashboard that the state has already done, and also to put up some financial information online. That's all they got to do to get a third of it. And then to get the next third, all they got to do is just develop a consolidation plan. So right there, that's two-thirds of the money that you're able to get through this new revenue sharing plan. The next third would probably be the most difficult part, and that's getting the financials in shape by requiring all new hires to pay 20% of health insurance and doing some of that stuff. And maybe that's going to be a little bit more difficult. But I think he's going to get significant buy-in. You know, and the other thing that I think is interesting is that there's nobody in the state government who's going to be taking a look and seeing if these things are done. There's nobody in the Department of Treasury who's going to be knocking on the door of Charlotte City Hall or Delhi Township and saying, hey, are you guys really doing this stuff? I mean, you're claiming you are, but are you? I mean, they're taking these governments at their word and just believing that they're doing the right thing because they're telling the state that they're doing the right thing. So from that aspect, I mean, he's really giving them the benefit of the doubt. He's counting on them to work together. And so since he's doing it with a handshake as opposed to an arm twist, I think that you may get some willing partners.
In looking at the breakdown of the governor's plan, and after listening to Bill Rustem, I just trying to have an open mind, it seemed a lot of what he's asking is not within the realm of craziness, if you will, and really seems the way to get people to balance their budgets. But what Bill said to me kind of really set the tone as far as people do not accept change very well.
No, they don't. And I think that's why he's almost taken baby steps. I mean, for example, on the consolidation plan that the governments have to supply, he's just fine giving them credit for the consolidations they've already done. If they've already consolidated fire departments or planning departments, put that on your plan, on your consolidation sheet, and turn that into the state, and that will do just fine for now. I mean, so I think that he's... You know, he's even being accommodating in that respect so that he gets buy-in, so there isn't a revolt. I mean, he's already getting some slack from these cities because he's cutting revenue sharing from $300 to $200 million, and that's going to really impact cities like the city of Detroit. So he's going to have some partners here. He can't make it all bad. He's got to have a little sugar to go with the medicine.
Does the governor have support from the representatives and the Senate to deal with the pensions, to tax those pensions, and also to cut the budgets to schools?
The pension thing. First, I don't think right now he has the support for his proposal and the income tax exemption on pensions as is. But I do think that there is some willingness to look at that for the higher income brackets. You know, maybe, you know, $50,000, maybe $60,000 of pension income is okay. Then after that, you got to pay tax on it. I mean, they're very concerned about grandma and grandpa who are struggling, who are on the fixed income, you know, who just have a modest salary to live on, or not even a salary, a pension income to live on. They don't want to go after that. So maybe they set some income levels there. As far as the cuts to K-12, there will be some cuts to K-12. I think it's just a question of where they get them. Do they do it across the board on the per-pupil foundation allowance, or do they go after the so-called categoricals, which are the special funding pot, you know, like at-risk students, the kindergarten, the daycare. I mean, do they attack those, or do they do the overall cut? So there will be cuts to education. It's just a question of which ones they want to do.
Kyle, you write in the newsletter that the Civil Service Commission's decision to extend state employee benefits to live-in boyfriends and girlfriends this week may be facing an override vote.
Yeah, it's actually, I just looked at my House agenda just this morning, and it looks like they're going to give it a go today, actually. So that's going to be interesting. Will the House be able to get the 74 votes needed in order to override the Civil Service Commission's decision to extend state employee benefits to live-in boyfriends and girlfriends? That is going to be interesting. That there's 63 Republicans. They need 11 Democrats in order to make this happen. We know that there are some Democrats who will be voting yes on this. Can they get to 11? Now, if they don't, the House Republicans can do a couple things here. They can record the record roll call vote and try and hold the Democrats who voted no accountable at the next election. And they can try and do a procedural motion called a quick gavel, where the president basically slams through a simple majority vote and proceeds this on and makes this official. The latter has some legal problems attached to it, if you will. They would rather get 11 Democrats on board. I'm going to be interested to see if they can do it.
All right, Kyle, thanks so much. Look forward to talking with you again. Kyle Malin, the editor of the MIRS newsletter. If you want to know what's going on in state government, go to mirnews.com. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Hey, my pleasure, Tony.